Right, so let's just summarise this. Let's see a show of hands who managed to come up with a filtering process for my target market description. Who's got a target market description? Yeah? Stuart has? This table? Who's got a target market description here? Yeah? This table? Target market description? This table? Fred's table? Target market description? Okay. You see this exercise? If you have a look at page, what's that page number? 26. If I were in your team, here's what I would have done. This is the condition I would have set. I would have looked at the table, realised there's four or more people. There are four questions. I would assign each person to answer one question. Just setting conditions, you know. Rather than all four, trying to work through all four questions. So you're responsible for that question, you're responsible for that question. Set conditions. I would have delegated responsibility for its conditions. Okay. It's just a bit inefficient trying to do a Moses, you know, trying to get the children of Israel through the waters of the Red Sea by a committee. It just doesn't, you know, just doesn't work. You just need a Moses for each question. You deal with this, you deal with that, you deal with that. Who got down to question number two? My methods of communicating with my target market. My methods. Down to that, yeah? Anybody else? Who dealt with filtering? Who's got a method for filtering out people once they start approaching you? Yep. Yep. Okay. What was the fourth question? My minimum. Who's got a minimum acceptable annual fee for their clients? Minimum. Won't go below this. Yeah. So another filtering tool. Anybody else got a minimum acceptable fee?
Are you talking as a table or in our real
life? Well, in your real life. Do you?
Yeah.
Did you manage as a table to come to a conclusion on that? You always have a minimum for which you're prepared to work. Why would you want to do that? Why do that? Why set a minimum?
Because it's a good business practice to do that.
Because?
It's a good business practice to do that.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just a... You know, you work out what your profit is. Of course, if you haven't done your analysis, you haven't a clue what your profit is. You don't know what's profitable, what's not profitable. If you've never done an analysis, you have no idea per client what's profitable. You're just guessing. And suppose you're guessing so wrong that 80% of your clients are totally unprofitable. That's scary. So you just set a minimum profit margin, including your time, support team's time, overheads, costs. Not prepared to work below that. Minimum fee is that. Bang. That causes you a problem. There's a brilliant practice down the road. We're a business here. There's a practice down there. Just be ruthless with your business. Protect it from loss-making clients, because that's your responsibility as the business leader. Okay, I'm going to jump, have a look at 27. I'm going to jump 27, 28 and 29. Tell you why. Because the message is really clear. Find out what your clients want. And most of us are guessing because we've never actually asked them in writing, what do you want? And because clients change, keep finding out what they want by surveys. And I'm not going to teach you how to do surveys in this workshop. You've noticed on page 28, I've put the logo for Advisor Impact. Who here has heard of Advisor Impact? Julie Littlechild? Brilliant at conducting IFA surveys. It is a key part of their business. And if I were in your shoes running an IFA business today, I'd phone up Julie Littlechild or one of her team and get a survey structured properly. Not guessing how you do it, a scientifically structured IFA survey. Julie Littlechild, Advisor Impact. Just type in Advisor Impact on Google, you'll go straight to her. She's a competitor, but you know what? She does this better than I ever could.
She's not in Canada.
She's based in Canada. She has a team over here. But hey, who cares where she's based? As long as the survey gets done. And those advisors that have used her in the UK say that they cannot believe the lies they were telling themselves about their clients. The complete disinformation they had in their heads and in their staff's head about their clients, which was just so far off the truth. It was a nonsense.
Did they send a survey to every single client or just their favourite?
She'll work whatever you want, but she'll advise you on the numbers that make statistical sense. And then she'll say, right, what is it we want to find out? She'll help you define what you should be finding out. The structure of the questions, how to send them, what to say, the cover of notice or information, who should call them. And she's just scientifically structured. And she's used external researchers in the financial services field overseas to help us structure this. So these are guys whose profession is research, not asking nice questions in the hope the client might answer it the way you want to answer it. No, this is a scientifically structured business. And those people in the UK, I met somebody in Milton Keynes IFP meeting, said it was just amazing what it told them about their business and their client base. Just changed the way they did business. Because they were lying to themselves about what the clients really wanted. Worst story I read about this was at State Street in First Boston in the States. Big investment group, big. Seriously successful. I mean, hugely successful. And they got Knowledge Wharton in from close by university. A research group. They did the research with the top advisors in the organisation and the top few hundred clients. Top advisors, highly qualified, seriously skilled, long in the tooth advisors, and their top few hundred clients. And they looked through every survey item, okay, every type of question that was being asked, and the advisors' views about what their clients felt about them and what they wanted was so far away from what the clients actually said that it frightened the socks off the senior partners at State Street. They were so wildly out after 10, 15 years of dealing with those clients that it was almost stupid. And these weren't amateurs. And then they asked this question. If we're so successful, making so much money, with so many clients coming to us, when we actually don't know what they want, and we're wrong when we think we do, what would happen if we knew? And actually gave them what they wanted. That would be mustard. That would be amazing. Interesting question. So, please, get on to surveys and find out what your clients want. Page 30. We're now on to your team. And move to 31. So we've talked about the people you surround in your community. We've talked about the people who you deal with as clients. Let's look at the team. I want you to take your pen, look at page 31. Page 31. And just take your pen and tick all those boxes that you think applies to you personally. Question one, do you honestly believe that you personally can advise as a financial planner, not an IFA, a financial planner, more than 100 clients? Because I would seriously question that, your capacity to advise more than 100 clients as a financial planner, knowing what financial planners do in this country for their clients. If you've got 200 plus clients and you're trying to be a financial planner, you're into a hiding to nothing. You are into a serious life problem. Then you may have 800 clients and you decide, I don't want to do financial planning for 800 people, maybe just 50 or 80 or 100. More than that, and you're running into a life problem. Because life planning in the way, or financial planning the way I know financial planning, you just can't do it. Just too much work. Per advisor. You can handle 500 as long as you've got the right advisors and support teams. So just be really careful about your expectations of you, your ability to deliver financial planning. Who here really wishes they didn't have to hire and train staff? Wishes they didn't have to. Yeah. And it will show. Most IFAs can't stand it. It's just a nightmare. Spoke to one person, came up with this conclusion. He said, this was a guy with 70 employees. He was one of my clients when I was in IFA. He said, it's like running a daycare nursery for adults. He said, it is a nightmare. I hate it. But to turn over 7 million, I've got to have them. So be really honest with yourself in ticking this page. Would you rather that you didn't have them? And admit it to yourself. You want to share with me boxes you've ticked and the reasons why? Fred, what boxes have you ticked that struck you?
Processes and systems not aligned with vision, strategy, service and rules.
Okay.
I was going to take the top one, but I only want 100 clients in, so it fits within the remit of being able to handle that number.
Yeah.
I take, do you think the road to freedom starts with working smarter?
Sorry, I didn't catch that one, Fred.
Second one on the right. Do you think the road to freedom starts with working smarter?
Yeah. What's wrong with that statement?
You're doing the work, not someone else. You're doing the work, not someone else.
Yeah. It's not about you working smarter. What's it really about?
Conditions.
Setting conditions so that if you don't want to, you don't have to work in this business at all. You just have to manage it. Conditions. Okay, anybody else want to share their thoughts? Ian, what boxes got to you?
Well, I think I ticked them all apart from the top.
Okay.
the top one I'm okay with, and we're not 80 clients.
What one's really got to you?
I think the vision bit, team unclear about vision, purpose and strategy.
Okay.
And that's probably my fault because I haven't got it clear either. So I don't think that quite has to communicate it to anybody else.
Who ticked box number 4 to the right hand side? 1, 2, 3, 4. Sort of southwest, southeast. Dumbing down. What do I mean by that? What do I mean by that dumbing down? What do you think, Andy? Andy Nevitt?
Taking people who won't think and are easy to control. They're not a free spirit thinking outcomes. They're just the next stage. So you're dumbing down by not taking on the right people if you want to.
Yeah. Who here joined this business environment to just break free from another environment? Who here became an IFA just to free themselves from some other thing that they were doing? Like you were a direct force salesperson or you worked for insurance. Anybody else? Who here joined for some other reason to become an IFA? Kate, why did you become an IFA? It's a weird thing to do, you have to know that.
It's a bit of an odd thing because I was in the industry in the States where they weren't exactly IFAs.
Right.
And the reason that I became an IFA in the UK was because I had got the industry knowledge and joined because my mum was an IFA.
Mummy was an IFA.
Yep.
Set a condition. Interesting. So that's one reason for joining. Community. People condition. Who here striking out for freedom? Let's show it to you again. And who of you has staff working for them or has done or whatever? Here's a really interesting dilemma that you face. The freedom prison. The freedom prison. What we tend to do until we understand conditions is that we say, I'm free, I'm doing my own thing, I'm running my own business, I'm the man, I'm the boss, even if I'm a woman, I'm the man. Okay? and then we employ other people and we tell them what to do and we control them to do exactly what you're told, when I tell you and where I tell you to do it, then we create a prison for them. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? We're the freedom brokers and we create a freedom prison for somebody else. How do we get out of that? Well, you set conditions in which they can work, and that's what I'm trying to teach you today. To go back to base and say, how can I stop creating a prison for somebody else? By helping them to understand about setting conditions. And that's a whole education. I'm lucky with Sam in that he's been taught that since he was about 12. But that's lucky. He understands five-year thinking from his teenage years. Didn't like it, but he gets it. So I'm really, really lucky. But you're not as lucky as that. How do you train your staff to think conditions? What conditions can we set here? I don't have to tell you what to do. It just gets done.
Okay. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
My staff don't see me Monday to Friday.
They'll probably love it.
Absolutely. But they get the work done.
Great. Conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's three rules in my office. First rule is free up Arthur's time. The second rule is free up Arthur's time. And the third rule is free up Arthur's time.
Sounds good to me.
So, just...
That's the condition. So you don't create the freedom trap. Good. Who has aligned their team's compensation to your business strategy? Who here has a recurrent revenue business strategy? Okay. Is your team's income aligned to that revenue strategy? Why not? Why not? You're asking them to go in one direction with you and you're paying them some other way. Huh?
It's called a profit share. That's a title I've given it.
Okay.
So if we're in profit, making money, then you get a share of the profit.
Okay.
Within certain parameters.
What we did at Gerard's, which took us forever to work out, we just eventually said, oh yeah. The objective is the whole team gets assets under management, so why doesn't the whole team get paid their salary increases based on increased assets under management? Oh yeah, that works. It took us forever to work out. When we finally got it, that is so stupidly simple. So every time we added 5 million assets, the advisors got paid an extra £5,000 a year basic salary. And the team got paid an extra. Simple, eh? The whole team was driven towards this one business strategy. They earned this one business strategy. They delivered services to keep that strategy happy. The whole team just got it. Because one man said, why are we paying them this way when we're asking them to walk over here? Does that make sense? Think about it. Okay. Page 32, it's not something to study here, it's just a suggestion of how you might think of working as you build your team. And I'm sure many of you have got that kind of team structure, but you know, it's basically saying don't try and do it all on your own. Build a business which you manage, not which you have to do all the advice. Might be a way of thinking and leveraging your time and freeing you from working in a consumed fashion that you do. Page 33, you know what? If you do what I suggest you to do on time, if you change the way you work with people, community, clients, and the way you build your team, I promise you it will free another 6 hours. It just will. And if you're consumed, it means that one of those two areas is not being properly managed. You're not managing the conditions correctly if you're currently consumed. Page 34.
Just a question on page 32.
Yeah.
On the
good team guy. The first one says, don't assign low priority clients to associate with
them. Yeah. Do you know what? I stole that, and I thought, do I actually believe that? Because I used to dump all my rubbish on the next advisor. And eventually I did stop doing it, but I was made to do it by my MD. So when you get a junior advisor, the immediate temptation, this is what the message is on this one, Steve. The immediate temptation is you give them your second best or worst clients. Yes? Have we all done that? Yes. Do you mind if I just turn this down one notch? Is that okay? That is not a clever message to send out either to the advisor or to the client. In fact, it doesn't make sense in your current conditioning business strategy, which says, what the heck are you playing at with lower grade clients anyway? They should be out of your business. It's just a poor message to send. Now, if you've got 300 clients that you can't deal with, then that's what you're going to have to do in the short term. And I know many of you have clients that you just don't have time to deal with. Andy, how many clients do you have in your business? Andy Nevitt.
This is about my business, our business. I haven't gone through as detailed a segmentation as Kate's gone through, so to the other advisors, we're talking about this next week again. Guesstimate, we've whittled it down to approaching 300. It needs to come for between three advisors. It needs to come down more.
Okay. Just be really careful how you play the delegating game. That's all I'm saying, Steve. Just be very careful. In the short term, you're probably going to have to do it because you've got to do something with them, and you can't do it all. So somebody's got to deal with it. The end objective is to get rid of all the low grade clients and make sure that you're more junior advisors are dealing with high-grade clients and being stretched to their very capacity. Yeah, that's the objective. Okay, 34. We're on the last third now. We're at automation. We've done rule destruction, elimination, automation. I'd like you to just stare at page 35 for 30 seconds and give me some feedback. You've worked on this page already. I'd like you to give me some feedback on it. Graham, could you stand up and nice and loudly read the grey box, please? Thank you.
Being a true entrepreneur is a conscious decision. It's a decision to invest in an infrastructure that allows you to leverage the results of other people and systems. It's an enterprise independent.
Okay, thank you. That's where we're heading with all this. It's an enterprise independent of its own owner. Okay, so a couple from each table. Let's have Jean. What thoughts do you have or did you have on this page? What thoughts came to you? Did you ponder this page?
Well, it's the same with a lot of money, but Mr. doesn't necessarily need a lot of money.
Okay.
To work that out.
Yeah.
Get rid of the clutter, the things that you don't need to do.
Tell me more about clutter. What did you think that meant as far as you're concerned?
Jobs that don't need doing lots of it.
Okay. Any other clutter in your life? In anybody's life?
Things that you could do that perhaps somebody else could do for you.
Okay, such as?
Jobs that you can outsource or jobs in the home that you can outsource.
Okay.
Other people could take on.
Uh-huh. Alright, thank you for that. Andy, what thoughts came to you as you stared at this page?
Just the key thing about what you just talked about, the number of clients we have, and you know, we've got 300, and Nick's probably got about 40 decent clients, so
right.
How can we build on that base, and how do we remunerate them? We've had a bonus there if we hit recurring remuneration targets, but the targets haven't been realistic because bonuses haven't been paid. So,
okay,
how do we remunerate the staff and the mix of parrot planners and administrators? And have I got that right?
And which of those boxes caused you to think like that?
quality and less clutter, as Jean was talking about. You know, some of the clients are cluttering you up with
right.
unrealistic demands because you perhaps didn't set the right terms or conditions.
I want to take this clutter a little bit further. Thank you, Andy. I want Nigel to start us off, then pick up with Alan. Tell me about clutter in our lives. What do you think that might be referring to? This is... Where are we?
On the right side.
Right hand side. Box number 5 down, is that right? Or 6? 6 down. Have more quality, less clutter. Focusing money and effort on what matters most to you. What do you think that's all about?
Well, when I read it initially, I thought it was all about get on and live the desired life you choose. You choose the path and don't allow others or fate to dictate.
Okay. So where does the clutter come in?
Do you think? Many things that you don't want to do, but you feel you have to do, or other people suggest you should do.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Nigel. Alan, any other thoughts on the clutter?
Well, it actually linked back for me to the third box down. If you're doing the things that you're good at and what really gives you the buzz, things fall into place. So you're doing more of what you want to do, less of what you don't want to do, which you've either got to find a way to delegate or offload or deal with.
Yeah.
I don't think it's more complicated than that.
All right. Have a look at these three words here. Sorry, this says becoming. Apologies. At the end of your life, if I met you in the last hour of the last breath that you take, have a look at that board and tell me which of those would matter most to you.
Being.
Being to you, being and becoming. Anybody else want to share? Fred.
Being and the becoming again.
What do you think I mean, Kate, by being and becoming?
Well, I would say if you have things and you're doing things, they actually make up what you are, which is what you be.
What you be? What you be? what you be taught like? I'm going to take what you said, Howard. Talk to me about those three things. Two things I would like you to do, nice and loudly. What's the difference between each of those things? Kate's expressed her the way she sees it. And that's point number one. And point number two, once you've expressed your difference, which of those, if I met you in the last hour of your life, would be most important to you? Talk to me.
I mean, personally,
probably. Yeah, nice and loudly.
Having some material things,
okay.
Not necessarily that important in the big scheme of things. Doing things is, it can be from family to business, to charity work, whatever, or just doing the things that you want to do. That's the most important thing for me, is actual life, as opposed to the actual having of anything.
Okay. So what is...
Being is something that you are, you're existing within that anyway. And becoming is an aspiration, which if it's the last breath, then becoming won't really matter.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, somebody from this table want to talk to me about those three things, what you think they mean, and which would be most important to you in the last hour of your life. Who wants to share that? Ian, why don't you start us off, and then Gordon, why don't you carry on?
Well, having things, I think, but it could also be family as well. Doing is the things that you have done, that be travelling or charity work or whatever, so I've been self-reported on. Being, I think, is the way that you've conducted your own life, the way you've lived it,
So to me, that's the most important.
Okay. Gordon, one final word from you.
I'm not saying having, but you know, having your family around you, I think, is incredibly important, probably at that time in your life.
Okay.
Having done things during life, important things, achieved things, but being is the whole, the holistic self. So I think that's the being.
Okay, which of those would have been most important to you in the last hour of your life?
Being alive, possibly.
Another hour would be good.
Being alive.
Having another hour.
Nigel. I saw them slightly different in that I read them as being, having is, I'm going to do it. Doing it as I'm doing it, but being is, I've actually achieved it and finished it. So I would want the end one thinking that I've managed to tick all my boxes.
I understand. Now, thanks, Nigel. To which of those do you think clutter refers?
Habit.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Clutter in our lives refers to those things that we seem to get persuaded easily to acquire and consume. As if you and I could become happier by consuming more. What a nonsense that is. I consume more, then I become happier. It's the Bryony story all over again, isn't it? And we consistently, as intelligent beings, fall for it and gather clutter in our lives that just distract us and consume us. Here's an example. Cars. Nobody in my road when I was 8 had a car. Everybody in my road now has at least 2. What does a car consume out of my life? Tell me about it.
Money.
For what?
To keep it on the road.
Tell me what I have to do.
Tax it.
Insure it.
Service it.
Clean it.
Buy it.
Petrol it.
Take it to repair. Oil it. Your wife's crashed it again.
The same lamppost reversed into that it was 5 years ago.
You got a camera on our house.
I told you I get to know my clients really intimately at a deep level. And we laugh, and the laughter really is because we all see it in our lives. And to do that, I then have to work a certain number of hours every year. I am forced to. It's a condition I've set in my life, isn't it? And I'm trapped by this darned thing that I actually hate. And I know half you guys love cars, but I hate this thing. And I hate it because when I'm in my office working another hour, I'm thinking it's that flipping thing that's keeping me here. If I didn't have that, I'd be free for another 4 hours every week. I exaggerate, but you can see what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is, again, I've no right to tell you what you can and can't consume and acquire, but be really careful about being cluttered. And that's why simple things like this can just free us up. Just frees us. Everything needs cleaning, repairing, insuring, protecting, storing, repairing, everything. Clothes, washing machines, everything needs more and more and more of our time to have it being there. And I have to tell you, when I meet with people, I'm not interested in what you've got. I can't believe people are shallow enough in places like Singapore, where there are lots of intelligent people, and the UK, to care about what you're driving. What's that got to do with the man's character and how much legacy and contribution he leaves on Earth? What's that got to do with anything about real life? It's so shallow. And we all want to do some really exciting things with our life. But you know what? Who you become, the quality of individual and human being you become by that last hour, to me, that is the purpose of life. That is the purpose of everything. Who are you becoming? How are you influencing this world, this crazy, mixed up, chaotic, hurting, damaged world? What are you doing about all that? Who are you becoming? That's what's important in my life. It may not be in yours, but it is in mine. As I view people, I look at them and think, who are you becoming by the path you're taking? So what I ask you to think about as you think about freedom from your business is, you know what? Give yourself time to become somebody more than you are. Give yourself time to become somebody more than you are to the world around you. Because I look at you and I think about what Martin said to me last week. And I said, Martin, I'm really sorry, mate, you can't come to a second workshop until you have a discovery meeting, become a client. He said, but I really, really want to come to another workshop. I said, well, you don't even know what it's about. He said, yeah, but the people were amazing. Who else said that to me in this room? The people. Kate, why do you want to join the advisor team? The people are just so delightful. It's who you become that Kate bought into, not me, you. And my task is to create a group of people, a million of you. It won't happen like this, will it? Which is what Peter's doing here. Who become like you. My legacy, talk about it in more detail later on, will be to leave this earth, sooner or later, with a million people who feel and think and are becoming like you're feeling and thinking and becoming. And why am I helping you to free up time? To give you time to do that and think about doing it, rather than being consumed every day by this clutter that we've got around ourselves of time and people that shouldn't be in our lives. Let's have some coffee.